Let's welcome in John Greco. He joins us every week. John Greco, former Browns guard, current Browns analyst. He joins us on the Fan Hotline. John, how the hell are you this morning?
Here I am. Good morning, Ken. How are you guys?
Here he is once again. Yes, John Greco. John, did you watch the quarterbacks with a specific reason in mind over the weekend, the way that Jimmy Haslam might have been when he was at the games?
No, I did not. It's hard for me to even think about next year's quarterbacks when we, you know, invested so much time and energy into this year's quarterback room, only for, you know, the switcheroo to be made with Kenny Pickett. I'm trying to have nearsightedness when it comes to this team, and I'm not quite yet ready to mail it in and start talking about 2026 draft. But it was nice to see some of those. I mean, let's be honest. There's kind of four names that we're looking at, four quarterbacks that we're going to be keeping an eye on this year, and one of them that played against the Browns against the Buckeyes, had a lackluster start, and we'll see why that may have been. Could have been Matt Patricia's new defense. Could it have been just a little bit shaky boots in week one in a hostile environment. You know, something tells me that young man's going to look a lot different a month from now than he did Saturday down here in Columbus. But, Beck, so some of the other players, the LSU kid, I thought they shined and looked good. So, obviously, that's going to be a topic of conversation throughout the year, and a lot of eyes are going to be on them, given the Browns do have some serious ammo going into next year's draft.
All right, John, so when you think about the upcoming season, seems like every year we have, hopes for a playoff run, or, when you're starting like a first year quarterback, then you're like, all right, expectations are at a different spot. But with this team, you're starting a 40-year-old quarterback. You've got guys, holdovers from previous playoff teams, but yet nobody seems to think you're going to be very good. So what is this season all about?
Yeah, it's funny that we're finally here and that is becoming a reality. The narrative was, which one of these four quarterbacks in the room is going to be the starter? And then we were so concerned about who was going to be the number two that it was like, week one seemed light years away. Well, here we are, and it's now a reality. And going to this into this season, I honestly don't know what I think is going to happen. And, Joe Flacco and this team, defensively and the guys that they've assembled around Joe offensively, they might surprise everybody and come out to a hot start. I know the schedule is difficult and it'll be an uphill battle, but we don't know what it's going to look like. There might be some young guys that shine, that surprise everyone, and they could be competitive, especially Cincinnati. We'll look at, what's directly ahead of us. They've had a sluggish start in September in recent years. And I think the guys in the locker room see the writing on the wall and say, look, I don't know if anybody is really giving us a chance this year or thinks we're going to be very good. And, when you're in the first couple days of September, those conversations still matter and they can make a difference. I don't want to say and that derailing this season is going to happen on purpose. We'll get to that conversation later in the year if we have to. But I think right now, everybody in that building, everybody that's getting ready to suit up on Sunday, thinks they're going to win and thinks that they can, come out and start hot and make it competitive here in the first month of the season. And then the narrative changes. And then you're looking at next year, the next draft and adding pieces to the puzzle. A lot of these young rookies have shined in limited opportunities in the preseason. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do. I want to see them come out and you have Joe Flacco, who's steady, who has leadership, who is not afraid to throw the ball downfield. So I hope they give him a chance to do that. And let's see where let's see what happens. So I'm just kind of looking right in front of me what's happening now and saying it's hard for me to even think about past this week. And maybe that I'm naive in thinking that. But as a player, I was like, who cares? Let's just lock out the noise, limit distractions. Let's go try to beat Cincinnati and start 1-0 in our division.
John Greco joining us here on the Fan Hotline. What do you think that Joe Burrow might struggle with that we could take advantage of?
Well, their offensive line, let's be honest, isn't very good. I don't think they've improved. I think that has been an area of concern for them in recent years. And, you know, when you have a guy like Joe Burrow that's at the top of his game, and when he gets time, he's able to find his weapons and really, really be a disruptor. For them not to really address that, and they've tried. It's not like they're just like, oh, let's throw anybody out there. But that's kind of what it looks like. And they've missed on some picks and some free agent acquisitions. But, you know, rattling him and getting around his legs and having orange helmets flash in his field of vision, that is going to disrupt him. And I think that this team, this Browns defense, is fully capable of doing that. I'm curious to see what they have dialed up. You know, you have a couple young guys in there. So are they going to create pressures? Or are they going to sit back in coverage? I don't know what the plan defensively will be, but I think getting him off his rhythm, and if you start hitting him early and send a message early, if Myles Garrett on the first third down or the first play pass rush opportunity of the game, if he's flashing by Joe Burrow and hitting him, I think it could be a long day for Burrow and the Bengals. So that's really it. You have to kind of try to disguise things, and he's a young player. He's very smart. He's very bright. He knows defenses. You're not necessarily going to fool him and throw something at him that he's never seen before. But I think just keeping him off his rhythm to where he looks kind of like he's hopping around in the backfield and maybe pumping the ball a little bit before he delivers. If we can get him off of his rhythm and hit him early and often, I think that's how you get him out of his game. Because when he just sits back there with the confidence that, hey, no one's coming near me, no one's touching me, or I don't really care, I'm just going to deliver to these guys, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, that's when that guy becomes dangerous. When he has that confidence and that swagger about him that we all see, that's when he becomes dangerous. So to get him off that, you got to hit him early and often, try to disguise some of the defenses, show him different looks, and really the crowd's got to be into it. And if the crowd's into it and they're hitting him early, I think we'll be okay.
John Greco with us on the hotline. We've heard so much from people that have been at camp every day, and people have talked to Kevin Stefanski. There's going to be a bunch of two tight end stuff. So you're going to see a lot of heavy packages. What does that mean for, you know, this offense, what their identity is going to be, and what does it mean for the running game?
Yeah, you know, Anthony, that tells me that, you know, probably not trying to spread it out much, obviously, when you'll have two attached tight ends. But that there's a couple parts to this answer. Those tight ends have to be terrific in the run game and in blocking if they expect the run game to look anywhere decent. Because when you attach tight ends, you know, they're in combination with the tackles, or they're one-on-one on the backside and trying to cut off, a defensive end or an outside linebacker. So those guys have to be buttoned up and dialed in their technique and assignment. But what that also tells me is that they're trying to, you know, condense the box on the other side of the line of scrimmage defensively for Cincinnati, bring more guys in the box, and then you get a hat on the hat, and that's how they create those deep shots with the play action. So hopefully early they're able to get some runs popped open and pick up 4, 5, 6, and then you bring a safety down, you cheat him in, and then that's where you hit some maybe delayed play actions to these tight ends, David Njoku, Harold Fannin. And I want to see what they can do over the top. So if they can really do max protect and help some of these guys in protection and take deep shots and let Flacco, you know, really, really test the field and stretch the field vertically, like I said in the opening comments, I think that's how you'll see the Browns get big chunk plays, get down in the red zone. And I think you're definitely going to see these tight ends featured in the red zone. And that's been kind of a struggle for the Browns offense lately. And when I say lately, these past couple seasons, it's about, you know, moving the ball between the red zones hasn't really been a huge issue. Now, I know sometimes they haven't, and they've done three and outs and have stalled a little bit and have had turnovers. But once they get down in the red zone, especially in the tight red zone, they just haven't been able to punch it in for six. So I want to see those tight ends, you know, get them on the line of scrimmage, have them block, have them delay release, have some play actions, and have Joe Flacco find them in the end zone, because that's going to be what makes or breaks this offense this year. Are they kicking field goals, and then are we worried about, my God, is this guy making, is this guy missing it, or are they converting for touchdowns? And I think that's going to be a big storyline. But having those guys block, having those guys sell, blocks and then release and pass play actions. That's going to be big, and that's what I'm going to be watching here Sunday.
Well, you talked about having those very, very noisy boxes with a lot more defenders coming up. And obviously, when we had Nick Chubb and in his prime, that didn't seem to bother him all that much. What type of running back is, you know, really going to be okay with having that many bodies around them and still able to get production?
Yeah, you know, I think these running backs that we have in the, you know, and obviously one of them's young, and we don't know about Junkins, you know, we'll see what happens this week if they end up getting him signed and if they can get him up to speed, but that's a different conversation. But look, Jerome Ford's been there. He's been around this tree before. He's been in the room with Nick Chubb, and I can guarantee you when, you know, the coaches put up a highlight tape and you can see everybody working in unison, the quarterback selling the handoff, stretching it, finishing his you know, release and rollout. When you see the tight ends, the tackles, the guards, the centers working in unison, getting a hat on the hat, getting the second level. And then at the end of the day, guys, you got to make one man miss. There's always going to be an unblocked guy, a safety or a nickel or someone in the secondary. So can Jerome Ford do that? Can Dylan Sampson do that? We'll see. I think Jerome Ford has shown the ability that he can do that and make those big home run hits. But it's about getting a hat on the hat up front early, and they're definitely going to test that early with the outside zone stretch. So, you know, condensed boxes, I'm okay with that because as long as you get a hat on the hat and get your defender moving laterally, but you're also displacing him off the line of scrimmage, then they'll have success. And then it's just about, you know, the running back having the vision, having some of the attributes that got them to this situation in the NFL. You know, they're getting the ball, they're using their eyes, they're hitting their targets, they're hitting the gap where they're supposed to, you know, hit by the design of the run. But also this zone scheme, a lot of these plays are like quote unquote design cutbacks, where it's not really like a counter where they're cutting back, they're just naturally curving their target and cutting back off the backside combination blocks, which these Browns guards and tackles are so good at. So I'm excited to see what these guys have to do, and I think you're going to see some big chunk runs early, and then that's when the play action starts creeping in, and you have these same formations where it looks like, hey, run, run, run. Oh, all of a sudden, Joe Flacco still has that ball, and we're seeing somebody scream down the sidelines catching a big one.
Are you still 7-8 wins?
Yeah, I am. I think that's realistic, and, you know, my God, a lot of people were really angry when I said that, and then, you know, the three of us talked on your show how some people thought that was an undersell, which, hey, great. But yeah, I think it's going to be where they're going to be in a lot. They're going to find themselves in a lot of close games, and then we'll be able to dissect under a microscope what happened in those games. You know, was it a turnover? Was it a missed kick? Was it a special teams thing? There's going to be so many small things that determine one way or another in these games. But I think they're capable of winning 7, 8, 9 games. I'll say 9 games. Because I think this, you know, in their division, they've shown that I know there's some terrific teams in their division and terrific individual players, but anybody can beat anybody in the division. And do they have a tough, you know, road schedule, tough schedules, especially early? Yes. But anything can happen in the NFL. And I think they have the defense for it when they're healthy. And I think they have the leadership at quarterback with Joe Flacco. If they can keep them upright, hopefully they have enough weapons that where he can distribute it and they can score some points.
John Greco, find him on Twitter at John_Greco77. John, thank you very much for the time. Hopefully we're talking to you after we're 1-0 on next Tuesday.
I can't wait to watch. You guys have a great week.
You too. John Greco joining us on the Fan Hotline. First off, the alignment went to Tate McRae, and I got a bunch of texts and tweets and everything, which a lot of people just thought you were like went by yourself. I'm like, guys, Lyman's married. Lyman and his wife went to see Tate McRae. Lyman posted a video, and I got a lot of guys tweeting at me to take Lyman's man card. I don't believe in man cards. Man cards are your are your testicles. I can't just take away Lyman's testicles. That's what his man card is.
Ken.
Well, I mean, but I don't think I'm gonna try. That's
but
the whole
Anthony,
point.
Anthony, did you go to watch the show? Was that the reason that you went to Tate McRae?
I knew like 5 or 6 of her songs.
Wow.
Because my wife runs to them and loves them.
Because if you went to see the show, good for you. But I went to the Guardians game and I saw exactly the same things that you saw.
Yeah.
And I did not walk into Rocket Arena at all.
The crowd. And we talked about this on Friday. Going to concerts is even more of an experience because now you're part of it.
Yes.
Because you're dressing up a certain way, the themes, I don't know what it is. Like, you would think, all right, hasn't that been that way all my life? Maybe at a Kiss concert. But now it's all these shows. Their fans are so devoted.
That's a good point.
An ICP show.
And that place,
Fish.
That place was totally sold out. The upper deck was full like an hour before, an hour and a half. It was crazy. And then it all let out at the same time the Guardians game let out.
Yeah.
So you had these two distinct different fan bases.
We could not get out the way I normally do. So we had to go out behind home plate, but we were parked over here. So I had to go all the way around East 9th. And it was two different sets of fish swimming in different streams. There were cars just stopped on East 9th waiting to pick people up, leaving the concert. It was a time.
I'll tell you what I loved. I loved that I could just go get a beer. Not a long line for beer at a concert like this.
You were in the demo for the beer people.
Yes. It was a beautiful thing. There was much of a wait.
Were you and Sarah dressed normally?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we dress like if...
Normal 40-year-old people?
We dressed how we would dress if we were going out on the town.
I saw a picture posted on Instagram, and you guys looked great.
Oh, well, Owen, thank you very much.
You guys look like two middle-aged people going to a concert.
We didn't wear the purple bras. That's
you didn't have yours on?
Because she has a song that references that. Or the leopard mini skirt. I opted against it this time around. See next time.
She doesn't wear a lot of clothes, that one.
She basically performs in underwear.
Oh.
That's, you got to be free moving.
That's what it is.
Yeah. A lot of dancing.
We watch a lot of splits. She does a lot of splits, a lot of leg right up in the air.
Why am I supposed to be so judgmental when we watch a combine every year?
That's true. Chris Jones, I saw everything from him one year.
Yeah.
During his 40-yard dash.
People were noting this weekend in college football that the guys are just wearing shorts. The football players just, especially the receivers, are just wearing shorts now.
Yeah. I don't know why. You
can't do that in high school still.
No. Why? What are the rules?
Oh, you better
have. You got to have your knees covered. If you don't have your knees covered, get off the field.
Looks like you're a Catholic school. Back to the locker room. You got to measure.
Yes. Back to the locker room you go. Cover them up.
The head official stands out there with a dollar bill.
can't do that in the NFL either. You got to have them covered all the way down, and then at least do it. Well, maybe you can have them up, but you have to have the socks all the way up, because remember, you have to have your socks on. There's a whole thing to it.
I wonder why college is so lax on that.
They've always been kind of that way. You remember the bear midriffs in the early 90s?
Okay, did you see the dude?
Guts.
Did you see the dude from Colorado, the punt returner? He had the baggiest uniform I've ever seen.
The 7XL.
And they just easily dragged him down. Like the gunner got down there, just clasped the jersey, and that was it. Just brought him right down.
So I left a name off. I put the names on there that I watched earlier this weekend, and the names that I like for the Browns, obviously, because until one of the pups get a chance to play, and until they prove otherwise, we're trying to do two things at once here this season. We're trying to get ready for next year, and we are trying to win some football games, and maybe we'll win enough football games where we don't have to worry as much about next year. But the Browns are telling you, I mean, again, Jimmy Haslam went to the games. They got 10 draft picks next year, two of which are in the first round. So they're telling you everything they got and everything that they're planning. And I actually should have put a fourth name down there. I didn't. I only put three. And then, of course, the guys from The Fan, Joey tweeted out the segment with us talking about it, because I said Lenore Sellers, Garrett Nussmeier, Carson Beck begrudgingly. I'm not a big Carson Beck guy, but that was a hell of an outing against Notre Dame, big game. I think everybody's kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop all the time with Miami, I think especially with a guy like that, and stared it down and was able to get it done. And Fernando Mendoza, the name I left out, and I'm getting killed right now over it. And I go, well, guys, we'll have our moment. Is Drew Aller. And the reason I left the name out is because I liked Drew Aller last year. And Drew Aller had a fine season. And then he played Ohio State. And hey, Drew Aller can't help guys dropping footballs in the corner of the end zone. Drew Aller can't help some of the weird play calls that they have in this archaic offense where their play caller basically calls plays for Instagram. He can't help any of that. But what you can help is what he was still not very good at, which he still wasn't very good against Ohio State. I don't think he was as bad as what people made him out to be or what the internet made him out to be, but he wasn't very great against Ohio State. And I thought that's the game that it matters. So I like Drew Aller. I like Drew Aller last year. Because of Bernie, Bernie was the one who exposed him to me. I've liked Drew Aller since high school. And that was years ago when he was just a kid. But damn, man, if he don't play well on November 1st, I already know that it's a done deal with a lot of you guys. If you can't play against Ohio State, then there's no point even bringing him up. Because if I do bring him up, the only reason you just like him because he's a local guy. That's it. You only like him because he's local. And part of that would be true. I like local guys. That is true.
So it didn't impress you 22-26 against Nevada.
He was great. That's against Nevada. He was great against Nevada. What I found really impressive was that James Franklin was giving the referees hell at the end of that football game. I mean, real hell, because he was mad about something in the final minute of that football game when it was a clear browbeating, let's get off the field, and something was not right, and he let the refs know it at the end of the game. He was still headset on, intense, up by 35 at the end of that football game. I thought Drew Aller was great. And a lot of people, yeah, you guys are right. I am leaving Drew Aller off. Drew Aller has his chance coming up on November 1st. If he plays well, I will be more than welcome to do it. Because, guys, it ain't worth my fight. It ain't worth the fight. Do I sit here and have this fight every single damn day? If he goes out there in the playoffs and has a good playoffs afterwards, maybe I will. But why do I bother having the fight when I couldn't have it last year? Because it's all Ken. All you do is like the guy because he's local.
But are you going to hold?
All right, fine.
Are you going to hold him to the same standard of all the other quarterbacks? Like, are you going to monitor just their big game, just their biggest game?
No, I'm going to monitor every one of his games, but I'm not going to put him on any lists until after November 1st. That's when they play Ohio State. I mean, I got to look at the rest of their schedule here. They have Oregon coming up on September 27th. That's a big football game. And it's at home against Oregon. Well, that's still not going to be Ohio State on November 1st.
Yeah, look, Aller was certainly not great down the stretch last year, and they went to the Big Ten Championship. They obviously had, you know, their playoff run, and he was not, at no point did I find him to be, like, spectacular or, you know, I think kind of his stock actually probably went the other way last year. The good news for him is that he didn't come out. You know, he has this year to continue to get better, to maybe we're laughing about, you know, what we thought about Drew Aller a year prior. Gives him maybe the leg up that he has a whole another year to get ready. But you're right. It's obviously probably unfairly so for so many fans going to come just down to the Ohio State game, because it seems like people are higher on Drew Aller outside of Ohio. It's because of that game.
Yes.
It's just because of that game, even though, you know, we got a chance to see him for the playoff run, too.
So, I mean, I liked Drew Aller last year. But he stayed in college. Probably would have been. He might have been number one overall had he had gone to the draft. Or maybe he was number two overall. Maybe he would be a Cleveland Brown right now. But I know this: that if he goes out there and he sucks against Ohio State or struggles at all, and Ohio State's obviously a good football team, Penn State's a good football team too. But if he's not able to execute, then people aren't going to want him. And the only reason I will be taking him for a lot of people is because he's a local guy. And frankly, I don't want that type of pressure on him if he's not able to do it. Like, we will find out a little bit. I mean, it is in Ohio. It's at Ohio Stadium. There's going to be 105,000 people there. I'm sure it'll be at noon because that's the way they show all those games, which, God, by the way, I was driving around after my son's flag football game on Saturday, and I went, boy, this is really early to be having a game here in 90 minutes. I was driving around at 10:30 on Saturday morning. I go, this is ridiculous to be having a game this early. I understand Fox is going to do what Fox does, and I try to get people to embrace it to some degree, because it ain't going to change anytime soon, but it's like, this sucks. Noon for a game of this magnitude, like, they got Grambling this Saturday. Grambling is a noon game. That's noon.
Yeah.
Against number one, though, Texas should not be noon.
I'll tell you, the people that were there say that was some of the loudest that venue has ever been. They said the fans were there early.
Yeah.
They were loud. I know Ross Bjork, that was his whole thing, was to get everybody in that stadium. And Ryan Day after the game said it was as loud as a game that he's ever coached at Ohio State.
Because all those things ended up playing well for Ohio State. All the things that I thought would play well, I didn't think that the Texas offensive line would struggle as much as they did. I think Arch started seeing ghosts by the end of that football game. He was bailing out a lot in that game.
They did run the football well, but I wonder if part of that is Ohio State using seven defensive backs, basically. Yeah. That's how they were treating their linebackers, with the exception of, holy cow, did Ohio State. Now, he's a Glenville kid, but Arvel Reese, did you see him? I mean, there are four or five NFL plays that mm-hmm. if you got to see mm-hmm. the nitty-gritty film of that dude, powerful, explosive,
yeah.
running around with his head cut off, that was awesome to see.
But when it comes to Drew Aller, I just don't want that much pressure on him, and that would be an insane amount of pressure. If you go out and you get picked by the Browns and they only know you for losing to Ohio State, there is an intense amount of pressure, and there's always going to be something in the back of people's minds. And then you have to go out there and you got to prove it again. If he goes out and he plays well on November 1st and then continues to play well throughout the rest of the year, then hey, you got something golden there, and I'll put him on the list. Until then, I'm just going to save myself any of the aggravation.
Now, the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
We'll get to the friction between college coaches that developed yesterday in just a moment, but I want to get to the friction between the Cleveland Browns and a former Cleveland Browns quarterback. Yes, we have more from the former QB, Johnny Manziel, who was on Shannon Sharp and Chad Ochocinco's Nightcap podcast over the weekend, and talked about his time in Cleveland, referred to how he earlier in the week said he wasn't even the biggest bust from his year's draft. And Johnny, still not on great terms with the team and the city.
I sit here today and I go back and forth with, man, am I going to let Cleveland off the hook and just like let it go? Or am I going to sit here with hate and animosity in my heart for the rest of my life? And I finally sit here today and I'm like, but I think I'm going to be pissed at them and hate them forever. So it is what it is, man. No love for the Browns. I'm rooting for 0-16 seasons every season.
At the very, very least, he did take some ownership of his shortcomings of his career later on in the episode. But that's at the very, very least.
No, he never does. He never does. And, we got this sent to us by a bunch of people overnight. Listen, he does this about once a quarter. Once every few months, he's good to this. And how long do I have to respond to an idiot and a loser before I just assume that he's just an idiot and a loser and I don't have to respond to him anymore? He's a cautionary tale at best. He is a punchline when he stands up there amongst his Heisman Trophy brethren. That's all he is to the general public, and that's all he ever will be to the general public. Is nothing but that, a loser and a cautionary tale. And flat out, I wish he was never drafted by the Cleveland Browns.
I really
wish he was never drafted here.
Look, the Browns, we could say they're culpable in the demise of a lot of players. Although, Baker is the one. We've always said before Baker, like, who are all the guys that have flourished after Cleveland? Like, unless you're saying the Browns ruined all these guys. But in terms of Johnny Manziel, like, it's well documented. And in the documentary, that's how well documented it was, actually in a documentary, Johnny Manziel was admitting what a you-know-what up he was in Cleveland. What is it to blame the Browns? Were they supposed to physically take the alcohol out of his hands or the $20 bills out of his hands or, the wig out of his hands, the flying to Vegas, the hiding in various closets in Berea? Were they supposed to lock those closets?
There's only so many ways I can skin a cat, and there's only so many ways I can call a loser a loser. And that's all he is. He's a bad quarterback. He's a worse person. And the only time I ever think of that loser is when he goes out and starts ripping Cleveland. Other than that, he never crosses my mind. I got plenty of other things
now, what
that
podcast
we have to deal with
on?
As a fan base.
That was on the Nightcap podcast. Shannon Sharp, Chad Johnson.
Okay.
And I'm sure in 3 months he'll go on another podcast and he'll rip the city of Cleveland and he'll rip Cleveland fans and he'll rip the organization. And I'll have to go out and pull the ripcord on myself again and go, loser, bad quarterback, bad guy, punchline, cautionary tale. Just play the hits.
Does it bother you to see that he's getting that kind of reaction from the people he's doing the podcast with?
No.
They're laughing laughing?
No, because if the Browns were a 14-2 football team, he would look like an idiot, and probably they wouldn't even be bringing him on. He looks like an idiot regardless, but he'd look like a more of an idiot if they were a 14-2 football team. But they're 3-14 last year. They're 3-14, 14-3 football team. Sorry, now you play 17 games. They were 3-14 last year. I told you earlier when we had the great big conversation about Shedeur Sanders' fan base. That's how everybody outside of Cleveland sees us. That's how the people who he's with see us, and it's up to the Browns to change that. And that's part of the frustration I think a lot of fans have with the Browns, is that I got this moron who goes on television every chance he gets and says nothing but bad things about the city of Cleveland. And none of us did any of those things that you just said. Nobody handed him the booze. No one handed him the rolled up bills. None of us handed him any of that stuff. At least I didn't. I know you didn't. So I'm sure, again, in 3 months, we'll do this all over again. He'll go on somebody else's podcast in an effort to get some numbers, and he'll say a bunch of stupid stuff that I have to sit there and respond to, even though it's the same response every time. I mean, eventually, I just have to stop paying attention to the idiot standing across the street, do I not? On we go.
Speaking
for
of,
another 3 months.
Speaking of losers, last night, the North Carolina Tar Heels 48-14 at the hands of the Horned Frogs of TCU, spoiling the debut at the college level of Bill Belichick for North Carolina. With all the stars in attendance and a lot of potential expectations, Belichick said there's a lot that needs to be worked on.
You know, we played competitively, but then just couldn't sustain it. So obviously we have a lot of work to do. We need to do a better job all the way around. Coaching, playing, just wasn't up to what it needs to be. And I know we're a lot better than that. So give TCU credit. They came in and did a good job. And they were clearly the better team. They deserved to win, and they did it decisively.
I'm not going to lie. I did kind of fall for it a little bit once he got that opening drive. Much like another Freddie Kitchens-led team, I thought the Carolina team was going to build upon it, and they just never did.
I got to show you something here that they can't see on YouTube or anybody because this is radio. It gets even worse. That's what was around him while he was giving that answer.
Well, the them getting routed speech.
Do you see what's in the press conference there?
I see a lot of balloons.
Yeah, there's balloons. Stars and balloons.
Yeah, at halftime, you probably had a chance to eliminate all those and go with the bare minimum.
Even Pelissero called it tacky. And he's like this objective reporter, and he was calling it tacky. It was crazy.
Oh, it is.
Well, so
it is.
They were, what, 4-point dogs going into the game? So
around there, yeah.
You know, they're home dogs, like, weren't necessarily supposed to win, but like you'd think, all right, if these two teams are whatever equal, or and it's not like a huge like 10-point spread, okay, the coaching, you know, we're gonna see maybe some evidence that coaching could make the difference. But I gotta be honest, man, they look like they had no talent on that football team. And then you're like, what have they been doing over the last 6 months in the recruiting battles? I know Keith texted us and said their recruiting numbers are similar.
Get them kids out there then. You better get them out there.
I remember us going over this, you know, a few months ago, going, does he have any commitments whatsoever?
This is terrible. Just terrible. I mean, I know TCU will go out and probably get vets, pay the NIL. Oh, boy. This is not good. So you better figure it out. I mean, you got Charlotte and you got Richmond. If you lose to either one of those teams, like, if you get a split, you're a one-win team. Right now, I'm looking at you as a two-win football
team. I mean, what
did
we think, you know, 4 months ago, 5 months ago?
I didn't think it was
going
to be this bad.
What did we think overall was going to be their record?
I thought they could go 7-5, 6-6, somewhere in there. I thought 8-4 would be a great year for them, year one. Right now, that was uncompetitive. And TCU is a good enough program, so maybe I'm giving theirs too much credit to the rest of their schedule, but it's like, man, you're going to get rolled by marginal football teams here just because they are going to be better prepared than you. This is you do not have time. You had an entire winter, spring, fall. This is awful. What an awful start.
Speaking of coaching, we had a little bit of a spat in the public yesterday between two coaches that will be facing off this Saturday in Oklahoma State's Mike Gundy and Oregon's Dan Lanning. Now, Mike Gundy was on his radio show yesterday talking about the comparisons in funding between Oregon and Oklahoma State, putting around Oregon around $40 million, and believing that Oregon's budget should determine the programs they schedule outside of their conference play. Now, Dan Lanning responded to this in his Monday press conference.
I got a ton of respect for Coach Gundy. You know, ultimately, how blessed are we to be in a place that's invested in winning? If you want to be a top 10 team in college football, you better be invested in winning. And we spend to win. Some people save to have an excuse for why they don't, right? And ultimately, he's a great coach. They've done an unbelievable job, but I want to be a team that's competing at the highest level. And we're really fortunate to be in that situation. So I can't speak on their situation. I have no idea what they got in their pockets over there. I'm sure UT Martin maybe didn't have as much as them last week, and they played. So we'll let it play out.
I clown Dan Lanning after the Rose Bowl. I can't clown on there. That's a good clapback.
A clapback?
You said clapback, and now I can't really respond to it. That's weird.
I would just say that...
You're nearly 40 years old. Am I saying clapback, Mitch?
No. You say dead ass.
I will never use that term.
Now I won't say it because you just said it, so congratulations. Now I will not say
Mitch, let me give you a list of things to tell him to stop saying, so.
No, sure. There's a couple terms you guys were like, Ken, don't say that. And I was like, okay.
Do you have any other phrases, Mitch? I'll just say, like, obviously it pays to have talent, quite literally. You don't have much of a shot in college football if you don't have one of the most talented rosters. And how do you get the talented roster today? You got to pay them.
I love when coaches talk trash about each other because most of them hate each other. At that level, most of them really
Yeah, I guess it does give it gives it a built-in excuse for the coaches of the other programs. Like, well, yeah, they got way more money than me. So I'll give us a coaching edge. And, you know, Gundy's done a great job, I think, for that program.
That's why. Like, there are guys who are buddies, but there's a lot of guys. They absolutely – that's what made – when Urban Meyer's 7-0 against Michigan, I know that there's some skeletons in that closet, and you could say a lot of things, but, man, that guy sleeps just fine. Because he's 7-0, and he knows that Jim Harbaugh has stayed up an extra hour thinking of that before. Because he hates him. He hates him so much. Is that it for about last night?
It is.
Outstanding clapback from that guy.